going to go ahead and call us to order for our May 18th, 2026 pre-council. We've got two items on the agenda, and the one taking up the majority of the time is our sewer solid waste cost of service study. So I'm going to give, and I'm going to use the microphone because I always get mad at people that don't use the microphone. I'm going to give this over to Aaron Keyes.
Aaron Keyes, Utilities Director. With me this evening, I have Kyle Stevens from Stantec. They're the company that has helped us with our sewer and solid waste cost of service study. If you recall, they also did our water cost of service study last year. And I am just going to turn it over to him because, as you know, there's a lot of slides and a lot of information.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Aaron. Good evening, Mayor, Council, and City Administration. Again, Kyle Stevens, and we've got a number of slides to cover tonight. I've been working on this study for the last 6 months with the city subject matter experts, and what I want to go over this evening is the recommendations of the study for both sewer and solid waste. We've got a number of items to cover on both sides. I put our agenda up here real quickly. On the sewer and solid waste side, we'll be first looking at the financial plan, cost of service, and then rate design modifications that are recommended as part of the study. And then one additional item on sewer, we'll also be talking about the sewer capacity fee. So before we jump into the analysis, I always start off with this slide that just talks about the process that we go through. And it fundamentally is a series of interconnected investigations. So we're first asking three questions, which is how much money do we need to run the system in not only next year, but the next 5 and 10 years. We then look at 2027 specifically and ask from whom, how should we collect the money that we need to sustainably run the utility system? And then finally, how do we collect? And that's the rate design portion. How do we design rates that are fair and equitable and proportional to the usage of these utility systems? We'll first talk tonight about the sewer system. And up on our list is the financial plan. And so up with the financial plan, what we're doing is creating a model that effectively forecasts out for the next 5 and 10 years the dynamics that are on the ground for the sewer system. I put up here some of the data that goes into that financial model. So we're using the latest and greatest audited financial balances, the adopted budget for fiscal year 26 when we created this model, and then we've also included the capital investment plans. Capital investment plans are oftentimes one of the largest components of these forecasts because they tend to ebb and flow and they have large magnitudes in certain years. And so we need to make sure we're properly forecasting those into the future. Additionally, the last rate increase for sewer was in fiscal year 2018. So it's been a number of years since a rate increase has taken place on the sewer utility. This next graphic here just starts to break down some of the numbers and shows the budget that we put into our model to start the forecasting process here. For the sewer utility, that's $26.4 million broken down between personnel, operating, debt service, so that's the ongoing payments of interest and principal on debt that's been taken out in the past, capital projects, so there are some projects that we pay for on an ongoing basis with cash, and in 2027, that was $5.2 million. And then additionally, some interfund transfers. This next slide here, I mentioned it's been a number of years since there's been a rate revenue adjustment on the sewer utility. Here I've just taken since that last rate increase and plotted on the blue line the consumer price index over that time. So it's a measure of how prices have changed in the overall economy. They've risen roughly cumulatively over that time, 27%. Again, we haven't had an increase over time, and so we've seen a little bit of an erosion in buying power. It's just one of the items we start off with as we think about the modeling here on the sewer side. This first forecast here that I'm showing is the dashboard on our financial model, and this is what I refer to as a diagnostic run. And so this is if you go to your doctor and you ask, how am I doing? What we do here is we hold the revenue steady where they're at today, and we forecast the expenditures out into the future. And there's a couple key dynamics that I'm going to point out here. So at the very top, that's 0% across. On the left graph is the operating fund. So that's our fund balance in each and every year. And the black line is the minimum target. That minimum target is 20% of operations and maintenance plus next year's capital investment. That's how we arrive at that black line. What this shows you is with revenues flat over time, you'll have sufficient fund balances out into the future until we get into the early 2030s. We show below policy target in 2032, and then we would deplete fund balance by 2033. What you're seeing in the middle here is the cause of that, which is we expect over time the orange line, the cash out, to rise over the black line, which is the cash in. which means that we need to use fund balances in order to meet that gap. And so current revenues would be unable to sustain the utility for this entire period that we forecasted. What this next slide shows is a rate model of just-in-time rate increases, meaning, as you saw, there's this kind of trajectory over time of using up fund balance, and we could go on for a number of years before we do a rate increase. What this shows in this model is if we go on that path, we could go to 2032 with no rate increases, but then it would need to be a larger jump in order to get the cash in to match the cash out fundamentally over time and arrest that erosion of fund balance, keep us at that minimum fund balance over time. Now, that's obviously not a recommendation I would ever present to you. This is just to show what would happen over time. What rather we'd like to do is the recommended rate increases that are much more predictable and smaller in any given year, so that we're more matching that inflationary type increases over time. What we're calculating right now in the recommended rate increases is no rate increase for fiscal year 27 upcoming, but then in 2028 going forward, inflationary increases around the 3% level would provide for ongoing sustainability. And so you'll notice on that far left chart, that operating fund balance, we're showing a little bit of a spin down there, but in every year we'll be above the black line now, the minimum fund balance target, and we'll be able to fully sustain the capital investment plan over time on the sewer utility. So next I'll talk about the cost of service. And again, that's the deep dive into cost for just the one fiscal year, 2027. And this is the framework we've used as we've looked at the cost for the sewer utility. Fundamentally, what we've gone through a process of doing is essentially looking at the big types of expenditures that are recovered in rates and figuring out how to best allocate that between the two ways we typically recover costs. So on the utility rates, and I'll talk about that in a minute for the sewer, usually we think about it in two different parts. One are fixed cost recovery, so that's a monthly bill you pay before you use any sewer. And then you have volumetric recovery, and then you pay, depending on how much you use on a monthly basis. What we're recommending here on this analysis is to take debt service in the blue line and recover all of those ongoing debt service costs, principal and interest, and fixed costs, 50% of cash funded capital as well. And the thought process is behind there is, regardless of ongoing usage of the system, those are two things that the utility has to do in any given year, has to pay for. Operations and maintenance transfers, some of those items, those more operational transfers, they're going to tend to fluctuate a little bit more with ongoing usage. So think about electricity and chemical. The more usage we have, the more we're going to use of those two items. And so those are better recovered on the volumetric side of the equation. And down at the bottom here, you'll see how we break down between the costs. Now, this is really the slide for the cost allocation that has the recommendation in, which is on the left. When we look at the way that revenues are collected currently for the sewer utility, roughly 41% of all revenues are on that fixed portion of the bill, the fixed charges you pay before usage is considered. 59% is paid on that volumetric side. When we do the allocation that we've just talked through, we're recommending 37% and 63%. And so there's a fundamental trade-off here. If we're thinking about it from the utility's perspective, higher levels of fixed cost recovery are good. That means the sewer utility gets more of its revenue on an ongoing, reoccurring basis every month. However, if you think about it on the other side of the coin, the customer's perspective, it's harder for the customer to control their bill because the more costs that are fixed, as your usage changes, less of the bill will change with your usage. So what we're really trying to strike here is a balancing act. We've looked at certain expenditures.
Can we ask questions as we go along? Yeah, Valerie has
sure.
a question.
I was going to wait till end of the slide, but I do have a question about the fixed part of the bill versus the volumetric part of the bill and how that affects the customers themselves. And I get what you're saying about it's harder to anticipate what your bill will be on the volumetric end. I know that we have, well, I might be wrong about this. I might be reading into something else. How would that affect all customers across the board? And would it, if the changes to the fixed, will it affect lower users more than higher users?
Absolutely. And you're going to see that in the next few slides as I go through and show you some customer impacts. But you're absolutely headed in the right direction, which is the idea here is we're recommending lowering the fixed cost recovery. Uh-huh. And that would mean at usage levels that are lower, usually 10 CCF or lower, you're going to see bill reductions and you're going to see bill increases above that. And so it tends to help affordability and it tends to help folks see in their bill more control over the bill on a monthly basis as their usage varies.
I guess I'll wait till the future.
Yeah, we'll see that on slide 20, I think, is when you kind of do those breakdowns.
You will absolutely see that.
All right, I've got Christina and then Vera, and please use the mic. Okay,
Christina. I'll wait till
the end. Oh, okay. Vera, do you want to ask yours or do you want to wait?
I think I'll go ahead and ask. And if this is on a future slide, just stop me and we'll wait for the future slide. Is everyone paying a volumetric level, or is there a point at which volumetric comes into, like once you've used over a certain amount, volumetric comes into play?
Everybody pays both the fixed and volumetric, assuming you have some kind of usage over time. You'd only pay the fix if you had no usage whatsoever. So maybe you're out of town for a month.
But we have tiers on this, right?
No, it's a flat rate.
What's water has tiers?
Water has tiers. Wastewater is just a flat rate for all consumption, the same unit cost. And I'll bring those up in a second. I'll show you the rate structure.
Yeah.
So under rate design, and this is exactly where we're headed right now, what we have is a set of two fees, and I've been referring to as fixed and volumetric. On the top is the water meter size on the left. And in the middle is the inside and outside fixed charges that are assessed on a monthly basis, depending on connection size. The idea being with larger connections, they have a potential to place larger demands on the system, so they tend to pay more than smaller connections. So if you're comparing a 5/8 versus a 12-inch. And then down at the very bottom, that's the volumetric component. So it's a unit rate per CCF, per 100 cubic feet of usage in a monthly, and that's $2.55 currently if you're inside the city.
And Eric, this is a good time too for maybe Aaron for examples. I think even though in the past we've been like most residential are 3/4, like right home.
Yes.
And then like an example of who is a 10 inch, right? You don't have to have it exactly, but just kind of like the different levels.
Okay.
Yeah. We can get to it.
Yeah. Vast majority are going to be up at that top on the residential. So you're going to be paying the $12.37 currently on the inside rate. So what we're recommending here, and I'll first talk through the fixed charges, as you would imagine, if we have a reduction in the fixed revenue recovery from the 41% down to 37%, those fixed charges in the calculated version here on the right side, you'll see reductions across the board. So we're going to reduce the amount of revenue that we're recovering from that side. Now, remember, there's no additional revenue we're forecasting in 27. This is just revenue neutral. So we're decreasing the fixed cost recovery. And then correspondingly, it'll be equal, I should say, across the board. So the dollars will change because they pay different fees, but the percent decrease will be roughly 10.3%. What you'll see, however, on the other side is an increase. So the volumetric will go up from where it currently is to a higher rate, from 255 up to 268 if you're inside the city, which is the main rate that you have for your customers in your service area. And so it's balancing two sides of the equation. It's the exact same amount of revenue. We're just recovering it slightly different and providing a little bit more of a tilt on the affordability side. So this really brings it together for me, because when we look at it separately, you see one going down 10.6%, you see another one rising. This one brings it together in the full monthly bill. For the average residential customer, you're looking at the 5 CCF level on the left side. That's your average residential customer across the board. However, each household will slightly vary depending on the number of people in the household. Their usage level might increase if they have more. What you'll see here, the real breakdown is if you're under that 10 CCF level, your bill is either going to be very minimally impacted or will actually go down from where it currently is in fiscal year 26. When you go to 10 or above CCF, you'll see a bill increase. However, I'll note they're quite modest when you look at the percentage here. So you really have to be using a lot to see that increase on the volumetric side of the equation.
I think Betsy has a question. Can you use the microphone, please?
I'm happy to see the fixed rate go down, I guess, except why?
Yeah.
I mean, why did you not leave that alone and just look at the volumetric rate?
Yeah, so where this came about is when we look at that, we think of a couple different things when we think about the level of fixed cost recovery. So when we calculate that and we saw it currently at 41%, from my perspective, that's quite high. In the industry for sewer utilities, we typically see 30 to 40% is considered the standard of high recovery. And what's been happening over time in utilities, not only here in the city, but also across the U.S., is consumption's declined over time. So we've seen efficiencies in household usage, better washing machines, dishwashers. It means usage is going down, the level of fixed cost recovery is going up over time. And so what I see really in this kind of a recommendation is just a rebalancing over time. We've seen that rise over time. And this would just put us in that playing field. We're right at the industry average, slightly below 40%, provides a little bit more affordability in the rates, just how they've evolved over time.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. This next slide just shows a comparison, taking that 5 CCF of average monthly usage within your service area and calculating both the current bill on the far left here, and the new calculated bill, and you'll notice there at that 5 CCF level, we actually would see a slight reduction. So we go to the solid orange bar versus the bar over here with the slashes through it. However, I'll also note, so that's one finding, is your average will go down. I'll also note here, though, the average in the peer municipalities that we put up on the screen is $43.40 a month. So comparatively, Columbia has utility rates at that average usage level that represent very well on this chart. And even with the suggested modifications here, we're in a very similar position to the overall average, much lower cost provider as compared to some of the other ones we see here at the average or even as the higher as you go over to the right.
Do we have a way? I will never get used to this. So I'm wondering if we have a way to model what lower income households, what their water usage is. I know that for, I think it's electric utility, I've seen a report before where we used the usage from typical households that ask for utility assistance. Was that right? Do we have something like that for this?
I can look it up.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder whether, since volumetric usage goes down with efficiencies, older houses and rental houses may not have control over their appliances to get the benefits of efficiencies.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. We can follow up on that, see if the data exists.
Thanks. Does it? I'm wondering, I think the gist of my initial question was when we change the fix so it goes down, and it goes down by the same amount for all of the levels.
The same percentage?
The same, well, it's not, same total bill is not the same percentage. Yeah, the same 10.3%.
10.3, yes.
Never mind. This is making sense to me now that I'm looking at the slide again.
Yeah, the dollars will be larger for some of the bigger meter sizes.
Okay. Interesting.
So the next part of the analysis that we looked at was just the Boone County charges. So Boone County is a special part of the rate structure. They actually receive a multiplier on the in-city rates, and that multiplier is currently 0.8. And so essentially it's 80% of the in-city rate for the existing Boone County customers. As part of our analysis, we have looked at and have a couple recommendations. So the first recommendation included in the study is that we've maintained that 0.8% for the existing customers. However, when we look at that analysis and we do a deep dive, what we've done is essentially separated out the costs that are just city only and those that are also Boone County. And the big distinction here is the usage of the system. And so treatment plant interceptors are the larger wastewater collection mains. Those are going to be used by everyone, the city and Boone County. It's going to be the local collection system that's the main difference, where it interconnects to the larger system on the city side. What we've calculated here is that the relative ratio under, with the current expenses is a 0.92 multiplier, meaning that it's higher than it currently is. We see more usage by Boone County than they are currently paying for under the existing agreements. And so the recommendation would be, and the city already does this, for new Boone County connections is to use a higher multiplier in alignment with this. And I'll say, we've calculated this twice now. So we calculated this in 2021, and we've calculated it here tonight, I'm showing, and it's come out to a very similar number. So right at that, you know, 0.92 level, what we'd recommend is using that going forward for any new connections. If, however, there was a chance to renegotiate the existing, I've just put over there in the notes, that would be an additional roughly $200,000 moving from 0.8 up to 0.92 for the overall system for those existing customers that currently receive the 0.8 multiplier.
But you're not recommending for existing customers.
Well, it's a little harder to do since they already have agreements in place with the city. So I phrased it as definitely use it for the new ones. If there's an opportunity to revisit those at some time, revisit it. I see that as something harder to do and not something that overnight you could potentially change. So haven't included it in the analysis. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we've got Christina and then Betsy.
Do we have an idea of when that discrepancy occurred? Like, obviously, we're looking at it today, but when did we start to see that shift to where from the 80 to the 92%? And how do we identify that in the future? And what kind of revenue was potentially lost because of that missed identification?
So I don't know, before 2021 was the first time we looked at it in a deep analysis like this, and we've essentially been tracking in the model ever since. And so I guess what I would say is we've seen exactly the same gap, if you will, from 21 till today. So it's roughly been in place. I can't tell you how it opened up from that period forward, but it's definitely been in place over the last, say, 5 or 6 years. And it's roughly $200,000 a year.
I would say the initial negotiations with the sewer district when we started doing these agreements, they just came up with that 80%.
They were like, pulled it out of the air or something?
Yes.
No, that's wrong to say. So Tom was with the sewer district when that happened. I don't know if you want to speak to the history of that. You can have a microphone.
Sure.
Here comes a microphone. Mm-hmm.
Some of these connection agreements go back to the late 90s or early 2000s. And when they were worked out between the City of Columbia and the Sewer District, the thought was that there was shared costs and costs that weren't shared, like administration and the kind of the retail system, the 8-inch diameter pipes internal to the subdivisions. And I think that 80% was maybe what Springfield was using at the time with some of their connection agreements. That's what I heard anecdotally over the years.
Okay, that's fine. We don't have to speculate if we're not sure. And then I forgot my other two questions. I rattled them off so fast I didn't.
Can I remind you?
Ah, yes. Please do.
You asked how we catch a discrepancy in the future.
Thank you.
I think by doing cost of service studies more routinely.
That's
am I right?
Exactly.
I just wanted to hear it
from you. Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what I'd say. So it's now part of our modeling effort, effectively. So when we do this every year, we're looking at that and updating the new budget data that goes in, and we've got all of this allocated so we can perfectly track what's happened over the last two now. So any additional one, we could essentially map that out to see how it's changed, and it's been relatively stable over time. Absolutely.
Do we have initial connection fees in addition to the 0.8? And do those also help us recover the shared cost?
Erin, you can say yes into the microphone. Nodding your head.
Yes.
I'm asking the question in the wrong direction. Okay.
With the new connection agreements, mm-hmm. part of that is they do pay a connection fee when they connect to our system.
Did the old connection agreements pay a fee when they connected as well?
Some did done. And some did not.
Okay.
It just depended on the agreement. We have more than 30 agreements.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the sewer district.
Yeah. Every time a new large group needs access.
Right.
Yep. Okay. I know you already said this. When was the last time we did a rate analysis?
2021.
We present the findings of the most recent one.
Okay. that was pretty close to when a lot of people were doing this.
So next slide here, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We were asked this year to, in addition, look at a different part of the rate structure, which is the overstrength surcharges. And so just to ground set, overstrength surcharges are where you have usually larger industrial or commercial customers that are sending the city wastewater that's above domestic strength. And in ordinance, we define that as 300 milligrams per liter of either biochemical oxygen demand, BOD, or total suspended solids, TSS. So those are the two terms you'll hear me use here. And on the left, what you'll see in orange are the current rates per pound of those two constituents. So 32 cents for BOD, and then TSS is 22 cents. What we did is we went through a detailed analysis, had a number of conversations with the city's subject matter experts about wastewater treatment and how that extra strength wastewater affects the treatment process. Essentially, there's additional cost for treating that above what's already in the normal rates. And so what you're seeing in the results here is essentially BOD is very close to where the current rate is. However, TSS is a little bit of a different story. So the city has made a number of investments on the suspended solid side over the last 10 or 15 years, and we're clearly seeing that show up in the rate. It just costs more to handle those as they're coming. And the recommendation is to move this up to full cost recovery to ensure that when someone sends you this higher strength wastewater, they're paying for their full fair share to treat those costs over time, which would be a larger jump on the TSS side here to get the calculated rates. Yes.
How do we monitor this, or how do we identify the users that are sending us overstrength?
Sampling. So what you're doing is effectively you have agreements with these users where you're going out and you're monitoring what they're putting in the wastewater system they're sending to the city, and it goes off to a lab, and then it comes back with the constituent samples of how much BOD or TSS is actually in that wastewater.
But that's in our agreements with the users. How do we know which users we need those agreements with?
Sure. So it's actually a permit, and it's mandated by the EPA that we have this pre-treatment program. And the industries that or businesses, facilities, because University of Missouri has had these as well. Mm-hmm. It's based on one of two things. Either they use a significant amount of water, they're a significant water user, or they're on the significant
standard industrial codes.
Yeah, they have one of those standard industrial codes where they are doing a process that could impact the wastewater if they didn't do pre-treatment, and could impact our wastewater treatment plan. So like metal finishing is considered one of these types of actions that would require us to give them a pre-treatment permit.
Thanks.
What we've prepared on the next slide here is just we've looked at the billing data for last year to see a number of these high years to give you an idea of if we move up to those calculated rates, what some of the bill impacts would hear. So there's only a small number of customers that actually were in this program last year and sending above domestic strength wastewater. And what you'll see here are the full bill. So oftentimes, as Aaron mentioned, they have a lot of usage. So they're also paying the fixed charge, they're paying the volumetric charge, and then this fee would actually be on top of it for the measured amount over the domestic strength. And what I'm showing here off to the right is the different percent change in the bill here. I expect this to be relatively modest overall. As you'll notice, none of these are above 5% over to the right. It really depends, though, however, on how much TSS will be seen. That's the big one we're changing. And so if they're sending a lot of TSS, they'll often see a larger bill impact here off to the right.
Eric, this shows both the fixed charge, the volumetric charge, and
all three
estimated TSS based on their past.
Total bill. So you saw that TSS is jumping quite a bit.
Yeah.
But as an overall percentage of the bill, oftentimes it's not that large because some of the consumption patterns here off to the left, they have a really large bill of the volumetric and fixed that's not changing with regards to that extra strength they're sending. So right. Need to look at the total bill to see the impact.
From your experience in other communities that have this, it's only 4.6%, but $19,000 change is like, I don't know. I mean, yes, they have a lot of money, or they make a lot, there's a big thing. Yeah. Is there any sort of, programs that we should be trying, in electric and water, right? We then offer conservation programs, or we offer kind of like ways to lower things. Do you ever see that and something for, I don't know, for sewer and salt?
Well, yeah. It's based on their water usage, right? So yeah. We do have key account managers right. that work with all the industries to reduce both their electric and their water use.
Yeah.
To help them with that. So by reducing your water use, you're going to reduce your sewer bill as well.
Well, but for this one, is the change, I guess my question is that, like for Aurora, for instance, is that 19,000? Do we know if the TSS sounds like it's something that's kind of outside control, because
they could improve their pretreatment program to reduce some of that's coming to us.
Okay.
So for them, it's a trade-off. Do I spend it monthly with the utility, or do I invest that in upgrading my pretreatment process so that I'm spending, sending less to the utility?
And that's something that our key accounts work with them on.
They can. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess the only thing I'd add on to that is in other communities that they can invest that, but they'll only do it if they get the right price incentive that this is expensive, right?
Yeah.
But it just is. It's expensive. And then the only other thought for you is some communities don't have this. These high string surcharges, but the problem there is someone else is paying for it, right? Because
like
essentially,
all of their rate
effectively,
for
yes,
it.
It's right. a zero-sum game. So somebody else is paying for this right. additional capacity that you have at the wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you.
In addition to the overstrength program, there's an adjacent field as well that we took a look at, which is the hauled waste surcharge. So this is effectively a program out of the wastewater treatment plant, where folks can haul waste directly to the wastewater treatment plant for disposal. And so think of this as septic tank waste, grease, portable toilets, those types of things out at the wastewater treatment plant. Currently, I've put in this table up to the top, there's two components to that rate currently. So one is they pay a fixed charge when they show up. It is tied currently to the 5/8 3/4 base charge. So it's the 12.37 that we saw up above in the current rates. In addition, they pay on a per gallon basis. For septic, grease, and portable toilets, that's roughly 9 cents and 2 tenths. And then an additional rate for sludge that's slightly lower because that concentration is a little bit different. So that's 4 cents and 9 tenths. What we're recommending is two changes here. So on the fixed charge, we're recommending an elimination of that one-time fee that they pay when they show up. That's not necessarily industry standard to have that one-time fee. And so getting rid of that, what it is the volumetric rate has the fully loaded cost. Essentially, they pay per gallon based on how many gallons they show up with. We have also up on the far right here in the black bars updated those rates. Those are based on the exact same analysis that we just did in the last slide. So it's the BOD and TSS cost. All we're doing here is calculating for these types of hauled waste the very specific loadings that they bring to the wastewater plant and getting these fees in alignment with that. And so we're updating to 10 cents and 8 tenths and then 5 cents and 5 tenths for the sludge rates here.
Christine,
yes.
I don't personally haul a lot of this stuff.
So, no.
from a person that's bringing that to us to dispose of it, what might their perception be? Are they going to be more satisfied with this approach, or is this going to be something where we see like people trying to do something different that might not be what we want them to do?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. I guess there's a couple of ways to answer that. I mean, first is there's not many places that are going to take this waste, right? To part of your question, I think. So
yeah.
You're one of the main receiving bodies around here locally that would take this.
Mm-hmm.
The second side is back to our other discussion. It should. And what I'm showing you here is really what the cost of service is for this type of activity,
mm-hmm.
what the cost is of providing this. I guess I don't have necessarily too much of a thought on what the perception would be of it. But what I'm trying to show you is it definitely is slightly under cost recovery right now, and it should increase. I typically find in other communities I talk to, just because of the lack of other alternatives, they typically, if they're an above board business, they're going to come to you and pay these rates to dispose of the waste.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, on the sewer, our last topic for discussion is the capacity fees. And so what we have here on the bottom here is three different methodologies that are often used to calculate capacity fees in the industry. And so there's the buy-in method, There's the incremental cost method and the combined method. And what are the differences here? So the buy-in method, what we're saying is we have an existing system with additional capacity still in it right now. So a new connection comes onto our system. We don't need to build a new plant or expand the system. They can already attach onto the system and we have the capacity to serve them. On the combined or the incremental down there, the next one under, what we're saying is we're essentially built out from a capacity standpoint. If we need new growth, we likely need to upgrade the full treatment process or add on larger backbone parts of the system. And so we want to price it based on that marginal cost of those assets. And the combined is when we may have a little bit of both going on. We've got an existing system, but maybe we have a big upgrade to the wastewater treatment plant coming up. And so we want to capture both sides and come up with an average cost. For the City of Columbia, the buy-in is going to be the appropriate approach and what we use for this analysis, since we have existing capacity and we don't have, you know, large wholesale generational investments being made in wastewater treatment or expansion of the system happening in the next 5 or 10 years. So the calculation, quite simple in the formula I put up here. When you get into the analysis, it's more of a line-by-line digging into the actual assets over time that have been invested in. But really what we're trying to say is there's a value of the system that's been invested in over time, and the current ratepayers have paid for that investment. We need to subtract off of it debt. And the reason we do that is because when a new connection gets on the system, they're gonna pay debt on an ongoing basis. And so we would be charging twice for it if we didn't back that off. And then we're simply just dividing by the system's capacity to come up with a unit cost. What we've done here on this next slide is I've just put up some of the numbers here. We've broken out the analysis into both the collection and the treatment components of the wastewater utility. And you can see on the collection side, about $158 million in current value and $73 million on the treatment side. The way we arrive at those numbers are a couple things. So we're taking the original cost, we're inflating that to today's dollars, accounting for inflation, and then we're subtracting off depreciation, right? So these assets have been in service for a number of years. It's not a brand new asset. So we're essentially calculating what's that remaining life. What I'll show on the next slide here is where we get to after the end of the day. On the table to the left, we take that total system value, roughly $230 million. Its current capacity at the wastewater treatment plant, which is our limited capacity, is 25.2 million gallons per day. And our estimated level of service for an average connection, a residential connection, is 300 gallons per day. When we calculate that means we can serve roughly 84,000 connections overall with the capacity we have. What that essentially comes down to when we run the numbers is that the current full cost recovery for the sewer capacity fee is $2,800 when we round it and get it for implementation in 2027. The current fee is $2,400. And so showing there's roughly a 17% increase over the current $2,400 fee that's set today. And so we would recommend going to full cost recovery. This again is one of those situations where essentially what we're trying to do is have growth pay for growth at the end of the day. When a new connection comes on, pay that full cost of the investments that have been made over time. If it's at anything below cost recovery, your ongoing ratepayers are actually paying some of that cost. So again, we have this kind of trade-off in the utility system since it's all in one fund. Any questions on that before we move on to next steps? Okay, sure.
And we have, just remind me, we have solid waste is next, right?
We do, have solid waste.
Okay.
And what time, how much time do we have for that?
We start our interviews at?
6:27. Yes, that is a precise time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the Boone County rate option.
Regional sewer district.
This one. Is there, when we have people connecting to our sewer from the county, they don't often, to my knowledge, have other routes that they can use. They're usually connecting to us because the county would require it of them and they don't have any other options besides a lagoon. And I guess it's kind of heartless, but I'm wondering why we would charge 92%. Why would we charge a multiplier instead of 100%? of the cost?
Oh yeah, so the main fundamental difference here is we're just accounting, they do have some local collection in the neighborhoods that the city's not installing, that's owned on their side. And so that 92%, the 8%, if you wanna think about it, is the discount because some of the assets are theirs that the city's not paying for. And so it's not the same as an in-city customer where service is essentially coming right to the property line.
Okay, so they're carrying through Boone County infrastructure to where they tie into ours?
Correct.
That was not clear to me.
Glad we came back to it then and talked through that, yes.
That was not clear to me on Platts.
That is exactly what we're trying to calculate, is what percentage that is. And that's, so that's what we're trying to update here when we do the 0.92, is to say it's essentially 8% less to recognize some of those assets that are not the cities that are connected in, that are doing the local collection function.
And would we apply this to the same for properties that are adjacent to city and or like near the city boundary or a collector? Do we charge the same 92, or no. Would we charge the same 92 ratio, or if they happen to be in the county but directly to our lines, would we charge them the same as a...
No, I was going to say, you charge your outside city rate, which is 1.5 times the inside city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to recap real quick what we just talked about, and I'll get right over to solid waste. So the financial plan, you know, we don't see a need for a rate increase in 27. When we get outside of that, though, in 28, we do see a need to move to an inflationary type adjustment each year, 3%. Doing those smaller adjustments earlier in time will save us from a future of a lot larger increase in 1 year. And so we see that as a very pragmatic recommendation. Is the cost of service, the recommendation there, lower fixed cost recovery from 41% down to 37%. And then as we talk about the capacity fee, increasing that to full cost recovery is recommended going forward in fiscal year 2027. I would also recommend on both the hauled and the overstring to move to full cost of service rates on that to ensure that those folks are paying the full cost of treatment for that extra strength they are sending the city. Next, we'll move on to solid waste. The second part of the presentation, got a very similar slide here to baseline us as we go into solid waste. It breaks down the different components of costs for the solid waste utility. $35.3 million overall for fiscal year 26 as we started this model. $20 million in personnel, capital projects, vehicles, repair, and maintenance. $13.2 million, transfers out of $900,000, and debt service of $472,000 in fiscal year 26 makes up that overall $35 million that we talked about. Again, key assumptions. We're starting the model with the latest and greatest data that the city has available. So that's the audited financials ending in 25, the adopted budget in 26. And then on this utility, the last rate increase was fiscal year 2023. Additionally, we've included in this one a lot of conversations about vehicle replacements, right? So vehicles are going to be the big cost here, as well as operations out of the landfill and the cells. So that capital investment related to that is all captured in our financial modeling. So this first run is going to be, again, that diagnostic picture looking out in the future. So we're holding revenues flat, so no increases across, and we're looking at how we expect the future to unfold, given all the data points I just mentioned we've included in the model. What you're going to see in this middle chart is the orange line, as we start off in 2026, is quite a bit above the black line. So there's a structural deficit here built in that is maintained throughout this period as we go forward. And what we see is we would be below the policy target, again, that 20% of O&M expenditures and next year's CIP in 2028, and we would be effectively out of fund balance by 2029. So in this utility, it's a much closer picture as far as the reduction in fund balance if rates are held at current levels. If we go forward again, solving for just-in-time rates, so what do we need if we wait till just when we need to do it? This next screenshot shows that we would need in 2028 a 17.4% increase in overall revenues, followed by a 6% increase right after that. And then you'll notice it's much more inflationary as we go out into the future. that will provide ongoing sustainability. However, we know that that's a large rate increase in that year. And so the recommendation that I'm making tonight is pull some of that out of 2028. Do a 5% increase in 2027. And that way, when you get to 2028, it's still going to be double digits, but it's right at 10%, followed by in 2029 a 10%, and then it steps down to 5 and 3. And what that'll do is, in the near term, fundamentally realign the revenues and expenditures on the solid waste side of the equation so that we're sustainable going forward. Much of that, again, driven by, when I do these solid waste rate studies, inflating operating costs, vehicle replacements, these things have gone up much, much faster than inflation. And so this is not uncommon, as I've done a number of these last 2 years, to see pretty large pressures on the solid waste fund in order to keep revenue sustainable on an ongoing basis. We were also asked as part of the analysis to look at the investment in the material recovery facility. So what we've changed on this graphic is actually down on the far bottom here. You'll see this red bar here. And so that's roughly $27 million in debt, which reflects that investment in the phase two material recovery facility. And what I've just done is rerun the model up here to calculate if that investment were to be made, that decision to be made to make that investment, what would the needed revenue increases look like? And what you'll see there is, again, 5% in 27, but we've added 4% in 2028. So a 4% increase will essentially pay for that debt service over time of that investment out at the landfill and the material recovery facility. Yes.
Was there a reason behind putting that additional 4% in 2028 rather than in 2027 to kind of even that out across the years?
There absolutely was. So two thoughts come to my mind. So one is that expenditure doesn't hit until the debt comes online, right? So that debt is not going to be in place until 2028. You'll probably make a partial year payment, and then you'll have the full debt service that following year. So it matches exactly when the expenditure's in the fund. If we push it forward, it's just going to put cash in the fund balance effectively. I think the other thought in my mind secondarily is thinking about, and you'll see this on my very last slide today, is your other utilities as well. We're not operating in a vacuum in any one of these. You have a number of other increases. And I'm thinking particularly of water, that when I came here last year, we looked at an additional increase of 10% next year. And so seeing that the expenditure is not till next year, knowing that water is this year, it makes some sense to stagger those two from 1 year to the next. Cost of service. So cost of service is a little bit different on the solid waste side. So I've got in the back, in the green color, the blue color, and the yellow color, the three primary functions that the city is providing when we provide solid waste services. That is fundamentally going out, collecting either the refuse, recycling, and then either diverting it for material recovery in blue or for final disposal at the landfill in yellow. And then I've layered on top of that in the gray bars the different service provision that we're providing. So it's residential, we've got commercial front load, rear load, recycling on the commercial side, we've got roll off, we also have folks that go directly to the landfill, and then finally the community improvement district downtown. All of these are separate customer classes underneath the umbrella of the solid waste utility, and we had to look at them all separately from a cost of service standpoint. When I go forward here, I'm going to show you next the results of the cost allocation. And I'm going to point you to a few items that come out of this. In these bars, what we're showing is the recommended allocation of cost in orange compared to, in blue, the current cost. It looks a little bit different than on sewer, and I'll just break it down. So we're essentially siloing each customer class and looking at the individual cost to serve that, comparing to current revenues. Residential is pretty close. Again, we're going to need additional 5% overall. Residential is very close. It's slightly over 5% there from the orange bar to the blue bar. Where you're really going to see this show up is on the commercial front load and rear load, commercial recycling, roll off, and the community improvement district. All of those three, we see the need for additional increases. Essentially, there's a larger gap between the current revenues and the cost to provide those services. And when I go through the next few slides, what we're going to do is use these orange bars as the targets for the revenue recovery for each of these lines to generate the rates, how high the rates need to be in the structure in order to bring in the revenue here. So this is based on the units of service for each of these particular lines. So rate design. So first I'll talk residential, current and calculated. So in between the 2021 study and this evening's presentation, the city changed the residential rates. So we went from bags to containers, and we also went to a pay-as-you-throw model where essentially you see this scale. So we have 35-gallon, 65-gallon, and 95-gallon carts. And what you see there in the pricing differential is essentially a difference in disposal capacity at the end. So the idea here is collection's the same. We're still sending out a truck, and we've got staff on that truck to go collect the waste, but you can only put in, on the bottom side, 35 gallons of waste, where as you get larger, you can dispose of larger amounts, and the rate should reflect that. What I've gone through it and calculated is the most current disposal and collection cost for this line, and I've added those two together in the orange bars to look at what the current cost is for these three different size containers. What I find is on the bottom side and the top side, we have a little bit of a larger gap. So on the bottom of the 35, that rate is a little bit lower than what it should be to fully capture that cost. Essentially, disposal costs are a little bit higher. Well, we chose a need to increase that one 12.9%. And I should mention, the vast majority of your residential customers at 65 gallons. So I think that's really helpful. So you have a much smaller proportion of the service area that uses 35 or 95. Majority of customers at 65. The 65 customers, 5.2%, they'll be very close to the overall revenue needs of the utility. Again, that was 5%. And then the 95 gallon actually saw a slight reduction there. So really what this analysis shows, it's on the edges. It's a recalibration on the edges to make sure they're fully capturing disposal costs. Currently, 95s are paying a little bit more and 35s are not paying quite enough. And so what we're trying to do is rebalance that perfectly to cost of service.
Mm-hmm. So I think, Eric, this has me a little bit concerned that it's getting away from the pay as you go. Like the idea of if you have a smaller cart, you're incentivized to theoretically throw away less or reduce. So seems to me that the calculation is based on like the number of customers we have that have the 35 gallon versus the 95 gallon, because a truck is still going down that road, right? And the stuff is still being thrown away or disposed of. So I guess walk me through why it wouldn't be, how that is calculated.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we break it into, as I mentioned, the cost service, two different components. One is collection. And as you mentioned, trucks going out, personnel's going out. There is no difference between a 35 or 65 or the 95. It's right. The exact same cost when we've modeled it here. The difference is all in the disposal capacity. And so we've calculated the current unit cost of disposal capacity. And what we find is that with that current unit cost, the 35s aren't quite paying enough to fully capture that 35 gallons that they're sending you or can send you. And the 95s are overpaying slightly. And so what this is trying to do is get you to defensible rates at the end of the day that are based exactly on the cost to provide each one of these services.
So like the cost to dispose of a gallon of waste.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what we're trying to do and make it defensible. So we've got to tie it back to cost at the end of the day. Again, this was this change was made in between rate studies. And so what I really see fundamentally our analysis doing is just trying to perfectly calibrate it to make sure it's tied at the end of the day to the exact cost the utility has here in 2026 going into 2027.
Yeah, Christina.
Newbie question probably, Erin. Maybe you can help me with this. But when we didn't introduce the cans that long ago, right? When was that?
23 or 24, they rolled out, right?
Mm-hmm. Cap rolled out. March of 2023.
Well, that's when we gave permission to start that. I thought
that's when the ordinance changed.
Right, but we started them in like March of 2024, correct?
Once we finally had the roll carts.
No, we started in March of 23 if we changed the ordinance to the roll cart and the cost.
Did we have carts in 23?
All right, let's just estimate.
Anyway, 21, I'll look. 22, when I got
22, that's kind of in between, right? But the last time the study or cost of service was done was 2021, which you said at the time you did based on bags. Why were we off? Like, what led to that so that we don't continue down this path of like, oh, we messed that up, you know? How do we fix it long term?
March 4th, 2024.
As I have a picture of my roll cart, so. As one does. Sorry, what did you ask?
I thought it was sort of a guess. Oh, here.
I guess my
question we were going to roll carts for bags. You picked up however many bags were sitting outside a house or wherever.
Guess how much 35-gallon can fit in there. I guess I'm just...
Right, like, so that
feels very soon to be asking for a change.
Well, that's
after
what
the, just got rolled out.
The original cost for the different roll cards wasn't based on a cost of service so much as a guesstimate on how many bags you could fit in a cart and what that cost would be. So it wasn't as detailed as the study that Kyle has done.
So additional information has, yeah.
Right. This is a way more detailed study than what we did to determine the rates initially.
I guess it just seems weird because trash cans have been around for a long time. Like,
not roll.
I mean, not in
roll
Columbia.
Cards.
Not in Columbia.
I was gonna say, I guess I don't feel like those are very different than what we had.
But it just feels like when we're asking the citizens to make those changes, you know what I mean? Like
right.
Every time we ask that, it's there's change. How come we didn't figure that out?
Right, things change. You know, costs change. Gas is gonna be a big difference, how that impacts our cost of service in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to be a big impact to how the rates are going to change and that those costs
and the way that,
get attributed.
The way that I saw it at the time was trying to be in the middle because we didn't really change the rates when we got roll carts. So we're like, let's just assume the rate right now for residential is the middle one.
Yes.
And then we are creating that process for a little bit less, for a little bit smaller, and a little bit more. So I agree that getting now that we have a new collection system and with a cost of service study happening in a routine thing, it should be. I've got Vera and then Valerie.
I think to kind of the previous point that the mayor was making about wanting to or wondering about incentivizing less trash being thrown away, incentivizing the smaller cart option. And also wanting to understand how we can recuperate full costs. I wonder if there is an option that is somewhere in the middle where we are looking at recuperating full costs, but this change where the smallest trash can is getting the significantly largest increase, and then our biggest trash users are actually seeing a little bit of a decrease. That is a little bit concerning to me from a sustainability point of view for Columbia.
At the same time, I also understood the cost per gallon
So I guess the question is there anywhere in the middle, or from your perspective, is this truly like the single path forward?
So this is a recommendation based on the cost to provide the service that is defensible. Council can choose to recommend something different.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of defensible, I think that we could defend conservation rates. The thing that stood out to me, and this is completely tied into what Vera and Barbara were saying, I can see that clearly there's the biggest increase in the 35 gallon. But when I think about the incentives to move down in size, because they are like finite tiers, right? A65 or A35, not limiting your use incrementally. there's still a saving between 65 and 35, that, you know, it's maybe $4 difference, 65 and 35. If you're on a brink, you might want to go for the 35. The thing that concerns me in terms of how are we incentivizing people to use less and dispose less is decreasing the rate at the 95 gallon. If we are trying to incentivize creating less waste, then I'm not sure why we would want to decrease the rate at the top. And that's like $1.70 difference-ish between the new rate for 95 and the new rate for 65. There's certainly less push to try and use 65 if you're one of the top users. So I kind of wonder if we can not to choose to incentivize 95 gallon and put a little incentive on 35.
I think it would
remove that cost out of 95.
Yeah. The 48 cents, though, that's where I'm kind of like, it's not that. I appreciate the knowledge about the cost, right? The cost per gallon, like that calculation. I think one thing I want to think about is how does a cost of service study take into account the not infinite space at the landfill, right? Like, so do you take into account, like, you know, the conservation incentives, right? They're there for reducing waste that goes to the landfill in a way that hopefully we don't have to expand it and pay millions of dollars on that expansion.
You've got it. So it's not direct in the sense that, you know, we can say there's X amount of savings. It's indirect in the sense that the more you throw out, the faster those costs come down the line, right? And the rates go up faster because we've got to go to the next cell and we've got to invest more at the landfill in order to dispose it back. So that's how it folds into the cost of service. But we're tied to real cost in today's dollars and not a cost avoidance, if you will. I think that's where you're headed.
Yeah. Is there any community that has that crystal ball ability to figure? I'm just trying to think of, like, how do we adequately value conservation and assign a dollar amount to it?
I hear you. I can't say that they have solved that one. All I can say is maybe it often comes up sometimes in the recycling pricing and what you do on recycling. That's where I most see that conversation, because you're diverting waste fundamentally, right? And that's where there's more of a policy prescription and how big that incentive is in order to get folks to maybe move waste out of the landfill and over to material recovery.
I noticed in the upcoming slides, we're not talking about kind of like the cost of service for recycling. And I'm assuming, you know, we're doing this right now, the cost to collect recycling, though, is included in your disposal, or not disposal, collections.
Correct.
Total cost. Included, I guess my question is, as we're talking about going to automated collection for recycling, are you going to have to come back sooner to look at the cost of that? Or is it forecasted in these proposals? Because we're talking about doing that. These are changes we're proposing for fiscal year 27-28. And we're about to make these changes in 27-28. So are those costs, and Aaron, you might know more, like, are they in this forecast for costs?
Side loaders, right? Are these the side loaders?
Yeah, the side loaders and the carts. That was the
$3 million we've got both of those in there. Yeah, we've got both those projected.
Okay, so they are. Okay, just wanted to make sure, because I was like, I don't want to have another, like, well,
Okay. But you are correct on this side. On residential, the rate includes both, right? So you've got the refuse, and you've also got the recycling in these rates. So they're bundled together.
Okay, thank you.
Next, I was just comparing here, much like before in sewer, to just a peer survey here with Columbia. Currently in the blue at the 1737. Again, this is the 65 gallon cans. We've moved to 1828. We're right in that middle of the pack to lower middle of the pack from your average residential customer for solid waste service at that 65-gallon container. And even with the increase that I've shown you here from the calculated here, we would, again, remain right in that competitive position. So commercial rates, that's probably a bit of a bigger discussion. I'm going to show you a few of these slides with these bigger matrices on here. And so commercial rates, there's a couple recommendations that come out of this year's study. First of all, we've got two different tables, as you see here. One is rear load and front load. And what you're really discussing there is an apparatus change. So it's just a different apparatus that's going up, either picking up on the front of the truck or on the rear of the truck. The customer doesn't necessarily think about that, but the city makes that determination what makes most sense where we're picking up this refuse. And currently, there's two different rates for those two types of services. Just to go down these tables real quick, the front load one is probably the easiest. As we go down from the top to bottom, we're increasing the container size. And then as we go left to right, we're increasing the frequency. So one time a week, two time a week pickup. And so essentially what you're seeing is disposal costs going up, down, and you're seeing different collection costs going up. But again, back to that same discussion we're just having. It's the two functions that we're providing, and these should scale based on how these services are changed. So bigger containers should be more expensive just because you can throw out more. But if we need to pick it up one time versus two times, that's essentially double the times we're sending out a truck. So that cost needs to multiply. It's one of the items that comes up for me as I think about this is, while we have this distinction currently in the rate structure, the reload and front load, that is not separated into a distinct budget category. So Those are both in the exact same commercial line. So from a cost of service, it's not easy to separate those costs necessarily. And in my mind, it's more not a distinction really the customer is making. It's more on the solid waste side. How do we best serve our customer? What apparatus do we use? So you'll see one of my recommendations can be to essentially consolidate these two to one set of commercial refuse rates for both rear load and front load, effectively just for the service you're providing based on this container size. So that's the what you're going to see now is effectively up at the top, this combined schedule for both front load and rear load. And this is the schedule of calculated rates for different size containers again, and the number of pickoffs going up to the right. It is adjusted effectively here to scale for those two different dynamics. What I should mention here, and I think the most illuminating part here is down on the bottom here, you're going to see very differential impacts depending on the type of service a customer has. And this came up in the 2021 study to a certain extent. We see a very big difference right now for the cost of service for instance, on an 8-yard, if you're only getting one time a week pickup, we see the need to raise that rate 24%. Where if you're going to be on the far right at 6, it's actually down a little bit. And so right now in the structure, there's this inherent difference in cost of service between the number of pickups for a week and how much you're paying for it. And we're seeing essentially if you have fewer, you're paying a lot more than those folks that have 8 times. So it should be, if you think about it, 8 times higher at the 8 times. But we don't see that currently in the rate structure. So what we're trying to do in this is reflect those dynamics on the ground that we are sending out and we have additional costs that essentially multiplies times the number of times you go pick up. And if you even think about it, at 6 times, you're actually on a weekend, right? So that's even a little bit different on the cost of that side. And so this is essentially to true up those two dynamics, make this simpler, but then also make sure that it fully reflects the cost of service, which means you're going to have very differential impacts depending on the exact type of service that the customer has and the container size that they have on this particular one. So we mentioned commercial rates in recycling. You do have a separate schedule for recycling. This is it up on the screen right here for a 95-gallon all the way up to an 8-yard and the number of pickups. I'm going to go to the next slide here to show you the change in the recommendation here. So we haven't talked about, as you mentioned, Mayor, the exact cost of service for recycling. What I'm actually recommending as part of this study is a simplified approach to this. And so the overall average incentive to recycle is roughly 90%, meaning the rate is about 90% of what the refuse rate is if you had the exact same container. However, there's a lot of variation right now between the sizes of it. It's probably based on the actual cost of service. What I'm recommending is a simplification to across the board, make this 90% for all containers at all different size and service configurations so that everybody gets the exact same incentive message in order to recycle. Again, valuing recycling. And what you'll notice down here at the bottom of some of these bill impacts is some will need to come up. So some get out, if you see the increase there, what that means is getting a much bigger discount than they should get. So they're seeing a bigger incentive. We see here over the right, the negative, they're not getting enough incentive. And so I'm just trying to across the board make it an even playing field where they all see the same incentive, regardless of the exact container size that they pick or the number of pickups. And so that they'll be thinking more holistically about their choices between the refuse bin and the recycling bin.
Is that like a best practice in the industry or?
So in the industry, I would say in recycling rates, there's a lot of different ways. This is where a lot more policy comes into play, in all honesty, in setting these. I just think in this particular situation that this simplification just makes it much easier for you to have that conversation with your customers to talk about knowing this is a value in the community, the value of that recycling so that you can see some diversion. And also knowing you potentially have a decision coming up on additional infrastructure out there. And so this just streamlines it on the front end a little bit so that folks understand exactly, you know, what that value is of getting that recycling container. So we'll go to another one here. As I mentioned, some of these you're going to see larger increases. So on the roll off, and give me one more slide because I think it'll put it all in perspective on this one. So on roll offs, what we have here is a price for pull. And you have two different service offerings as a city right now. One is a full standard size roll-off, and one's a mini roll-off. So think about this. There's a number of different uses for this. One I tend to think of the most is when you've got a construction project at home. So they're demoing something in the house. They bring that portable container, they put it in the driveway, and they fill it up. That's what's going on here. This is the price for the pull, so the drop-off, and then they come back to pick it up. In addition, when it gets to the landfill, you're going to pay for the tonnage as well. So there's two components of this. The city, however, charges this one as a standalone rate. What you're seeing on both of these through the cost of service is a need to fundamentally increase those rates well above the overall 5% that we talked about here. And so 36.4%, 33.6% on the mini roll-off. However, what we did as part of this, because we saw those increases, we had a conversation about, you know, because this is not just the city providing the service. There are private haulers here. What I put here is 2 tons, and we, working with city staff, got some quotes for 2 tons of roll-off. And what you can see here is the current fee and the proposed that we have here at 2 tons, still significantly under the private market. My worry here is whenever you increase these rates, we always have to think about alternatives the customer may have, and you could affect demand on this side. What we see here is you can move to cost of service, you're still going to be the lowest cost provider in the service area for this type of service. Again, at the 2 tons level, this could vary depending on the exact tonnage, but that's a very common level that they would send. The last big one to talk through is the community improvement district, CID rates. There's a couple, and I know this is a massive table off to the right. So, yes.
Do you want to explain it, or do you have a question? Do you want them to explain first?
I have a question, and it's not, it is related to CID rates, but it's not on this slide.
Oh, okay.
And this is a question for Aaron. Have we audited our list of users on this? Our account list?
So that is something we are working on. So when we were doing this cost of service, we realized there was going to be a significant impact to the downtown district as we saw those costs come in. So I met with them initially, or I met with their, I met with Kathy Becker. I don't know what her operations manager or something. About this and talked about what the increases were going to look like. And she was actually the one that suggested kind of consolidating some of these to simplify it. But one of the things we talked about was that we do need to perform an audit to ensure that each of the individual properties, one, are being charged, and then two, they're being charged appropriately. So that's something that our staff is going to begin working on, because that's not something we can do in like a week or something. That's going to take us some significant time to work on.
Yeah.
So that is something that we've initiated.
Do we have an idea of how many users we were missing, and is that built into our rates? Like, not built into our rates, but built in on into our calculation for the cost.
We have the current inventory of users that we've used to come up with the rates, but I think, as Aaron mentioned, it potentially needs to be updated or just audited to make sure that we have the right ones. But we have a current through the utility billing system estimate of customers that we're billing under these rates.
So if we are missing
yes.
a significant number of users, are we over calculating the cost of service?
I would say from all the analysis I've ever done on this, no. This one continually shows to be well under cost recovery. In fact, the rates I'm showing here are only a step toward cost recovery. I actually think this one over time, and the write-up I'll have in my analysis, is likely continued movement of higher rates on this one to fully pay for the cost of service. This one shows as being, from the last few studies, roughly 50% in total under cost recovery, just to give you a kind of magnitude.
So we are under cost recovery.
Yes.
But because we're not counting the number of customers, potentially not counting them accurately.
That would help, right? If we have more.
Right.
Absolutely.
When we're calculating how much we need to change rates by, are we including recovering rates by charging everyone?
I only know about the customers we're billing, right? So that's the only way. But if we were to update and find additional customers, that would change the numbers around. That would change the analysis. So I do think you'd have to find a lot, though, to get to full cost recovery.
Yeah,
so it would help, but it's a big gap there on that one.
I don't think we're getting the full cost recovery by adding customers. I'm just wondering if we need to, the change needs to be different based on the true number of customers.
I would almost recommend on this one that you get that audit first, and we make sure we've got the right change, because that might move the numbers. That's where I'm headed my number. So we calculated with what we had to show you tonight, but I would absolutely, after we had that conversation and you heard about the need for the audit, you know, once that's available, to update these numbers so that you have a really good idea of exactly the kind of change we need in these rates. We know it's in an upward direction, but how much is that? So
when are we anticipating a vote on changes that come out of this study to come to us?
Be part of the budget, I imagine. So will the audit be completed before the budget?
No.
So I think that's the question, is if the recommendation is it to,
I think the significance of the under cost recovery is that even by moving forward with this, even if we add a number of additional accounts, we're still going to be under cost recovery. Yeah. So I would recommend for this year that moving forward with this recommendation is fine. And then once we have the audit the following year, then we can evaluate how big that additional increase needs to be.
Because the concern is that if you were to make a suggested change without the data, that it, like these numbers, you're using it with the data that we have, right?
Correct.
And we have to do something for fiscal year 27, a proposed change.
Yes.
And so would that then maybe once that audit is completed, would we then revisit with the cost of service and you'd bring us back whenever that is done?
Yes.
An update to these numbers. Would these numbers change based on those? Yeah. And so I think that's the thing. What's the timeline? Realistically, knowing that I can't just not make a change because you don't have it done yet, when would all these things happen?
So I think maybe the way I would break this down is these rates as presented are a very solid step in the right direction. They're going to generate more revenue. They're going to bring the different charges in alignment with the underlying cost of service, much like we've talked about with our other rates, right? Disposal and collection capacity. What the audit will do is help us determine in the future how much more we need to do, because we're under cost recovery here. But we don't know that exact level until we have the full billing units to figure out exactly what that is. It may mean we don't have to go up as much in future years, is the way I would think about it as one alternative.
Okay. Christina has a question. Yes.
I think I just need a little bit more background. So what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm hearing wrong, but we have users in the CID that are not paying for their services, and do we have an idea of the percentage of that? How did we identify that, and when did we identify that?
At this point, I think it's just suspicion. We haven't had time to dig into it. Some of the examples that I do know about are when a place was established and their rate was established in the system, they were maybe put in as a retail and now it's a restaurant. And so it's changed and it didn't get changed in the system. So that's the main one that I'm worried about, and maybe, and the rest is speculative. So I don't know that we have that many missing accounts. That's something that we're gonna do the audit and find out.
One of the things we have is through the CID, they actually have a committee that's actually looking at the solid waste. And so it'll be our staff and the CID working collaboratively to actually do that audit. And so that will ensure that we know exactly who their members are, what are some of the things that are going on. I mean, the prime example is you have a couple of storefronts where at one point you had several storefronts that was one business, mm-hmm. and now that's been subdivided into multiple businesses. So just making sure that we have an account for everything that's going on. And so this process will allow us to have a mechanism for doing that audit, but it's also something that we can do on a regular basis to make sure that we keep account.
So outside of the audit, how could we implement this in our processes? So like when plats change, or like what would the mechanism be in order to catch that, so it's not just caught at an audit, but like more proactively?
Well, so the hardest part about the CID is it's not a, so like for most of our business districts, there's just a dumpster that's set for that individual business. Mm-hmm. For the CID, it's all shared. And so it's really having an account where we know exactly what businesses are, what are they doing to see what their impact will be. And so that's part of that process.
Yeah. So I have a couple questions. Also, I want to clarify, I believe that at least Erin found out about this when she was meeting with the CID with Kathy Becker to go over these rates. So I don't expect that if we need to do this by the budget, she would have had enough time to respond to it. But I do want to understand how that affects our numbers. Just because we'll finish an audit, then we'll correct it, and then we'll collect differently than we extrapolated. So what will, if you do an audit, will that come back to us? Will we get to see the results? When will that come back?
Yes, we can provide results of how many facilities changed or were added.
Thanks. I think my other question about like how can we stay on top of this, businesses, restaurants have a licensure component, right? So when a new restaurant opens or changes location, is that something that we can add to check on at the point of licensure? And I'm not sure what the other business and licensure types are offhand. I'm looking at the list that Kathy gave me, and I'm seeing a lot of restaurants. That may be a useful catch net if we can implement that during our licensure process.
Yeah, and similarly, we added something last year with when you get the online business license renewal, like if that's the sort of thing that comes in for the mailings to, you know, like what is this business? Just the question, you know, it might be able to help. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you're probably your restaurants are the easiest ones to identify and catch.
Right.
It's the retail sizes that are where you have a large retail space or a medium retail space or a small retail space, and that looks at the impact on our refuse system. And so those are the ones that are a little harder to look at. And so it's the same with the office space. So those are things where you want to actually look at the square footage to kind of say, here's how we determine what that bill should be.
The ones that they brought me were not ones that they're like, is this size right? They're ones that were like, hey, our person says that they're not paying. Like, are they on your list? They're ones that are missing, not size right.
Looking forward to the audit on this. And I'm mindful over the time because I know you have a few more slides and then utility staff have some slides.
I had some slides, but I don't think we're going to get to them. It doesn't look like.
All right.
I'm afraid.
Well, and hopefully they'll be part of also our budget discussions because that's what they're all related to. But you want to do them before I understand.
I'll need some recommendations from you guys.
Yeah.
So just before we leave CID, the one big recommendation came out of here too is the green we mentioned. It's just consolidating. So that'll help too in the audit to a certain extent because there's less categories here. There's a ton of categories here. So the idea is in those green ones, those have very similar rates and expected trash generation potential. And so the idea is there to just push them together into one category. Effectively, they would all have the same three rates for a small, large, and medium establishment for those. And then, of course, the rates are at full cost of service there on the right for an increment, essentially. We're moving toward cost of service on these ones. So finally, just a recommendation here, financial plan, 5% increase in 2027, followed by two 10% increases, and then it would go to 5% after that is what we currently see when we run the financial model. On cost of service and rate design, you know, what we're doing is essentially balancing the increases across customer classes here. So essentially trying to move everyone to cost of service in a measured way, with also recycling, moving that to a uniform incentive across all of your different size containers and number of pickups per week. And then consistent scaling for the commercial trash. That's one of the bigger items. I know that's a really big one. We identified that in 21 as well. There's some bigger impacts associated with that, but it does need to be fixed in the rate structure as we see it.
And just a quick note, we did not implement the cost of service study in 2021. We were not directed to do so. So
in 21 was the 5%, I think is what we were said, residential only increase.
Yes, and that was residential only was 5.15%, the rate increase in 21. And I think that was to pay the it was because they increased the pay for the drivers.
Collectors.
And so we had to increase revenue in order to be able to pay the drivers.
Do you recall in 21 what the recommendations were, or 20 recommendations were for the cost of service?
Similar to what he's presenting.
Okay. Tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, slight modifications. Cost have obviously changed, but some of these are very similar systematic changes that we see that need to be made to get alignment with cost of service. So while the numbers have changed overall, some of the larger recommendations are very similar.
Yeah. Thank you.
This last slide, and we can conclude in any other questions, but what I wanted to do here is just show the combined effects here. And so what I'm stacking on top here is a 65-gallon container. That's your most common in purple. And then we're going to have wastewater in green, and we're going to have water in blue. Knowing that next year the water rate increased for 27, when I last presented was 10%. This just shows that overall impact and how, to a certain extent, these increases work together to make that bill impact not as large as it would otherwise seem when you look at each individually, right? So your first columns off to the left are the 5 CCF level. That's your average user, right? So what we're seeing down there is $68.30 per month to $71.19. That's 4%, 4.23%. I've also shown 7 CCF and 10 CCF. And as I mentioned with that wastewater change, you'll see as you get to higher levels of usage there, a little bit larger of an impact. However, overall, 5%, a little over 5% here for those. And so that sewer does help out when you combine these two together at some of these usage levels, these more average usage levels, to keep the bill impacts manageable as you think of all three utilities here that we've done studies for the last 2 years.
Eric, have you also done, like, because the next year you have like that potential 14% for, you know, sort of, I mean,
solid,
like,
waste, yes.
You need to make some updated slides to help get us a feel for what would this look like next year,
yes,
at this meeting.
Yes, it's a lot of different options.
I mean, we can all calculate it on our own, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think that's it. So appreciate all your time tonight.
You still have a little bit of time, Eric. Erin, if you want to try to go to the staff slides really quick.
I can try.
I think it's useful.
Okay, so let's see. And this is just summarizes what Kyle was talking about with water, sewer, and solid waste. But for electric, what we discussed the other night with the forecast was a 6%. So these slides show if we did a 6% increase on electric, how that would roll out. And this is a residential bill impact for like a low water user. All of these examples, we just use the 65-gallon cart since that's the most common cart. And for water, this is a 3 CCF, and electric is a 750-kilowatt. And it shows a total bill impact difference of about $8.90. If we move up to more of an average, and I know these, it's difficult what average is, but, you know, just trying to give you some idea of the numbers, 1,000 kilowatt monthly usage for electric and 5 CCF for water and sewer. Again, the 65-gallon cart, about a $10.75 average. That's for gas heat, electric heat, it's the same, you know, 1,000 kilowatts. It's still a 6% difference. Then a high user, 1,250 kilowatt average, and a 5 CCF, so we just kept it at the 5 CCF, about $11.84. So what's that range? So between $8.90 and a little less than $12 for a residential user is what we're looking at. And then we have some commercial examples. That's a 3/4-inch meter, a grocery store which uses a lot of water. Their bill impacts, and I probably should have put, we should probably should have put percentages on here, but $626 for all of them. But their monthly bill is $14,000. So, and then another commercial example, downtown retail, they don't use a whole lot of water. So the biggest difference is in their electric. Again, a percentage of an $800 bill. And office building, again, they don't use much water either, so the biggest change for them is going to be the in the electric, 6%. So that's just kind of rough. I think I sent these to you guys.
Yeah, and they were attached, yeah.
And so, yeah, we will need some recommendations, you know, based on Kyle's recommendations. You know, is there something specific you want to move forward for? Kind of what I heard specifically on the roll carts is keeping the 95 gallon the same, and then maybe distributing those costs over the other two. Would that be?
I think this is what well, no one was hard because yes, right? But then at the same time, I appreciate having the defensible, this is the cost to pick up a gallon. It does seem weird though to decrease the cost for the large, like that just seems like the wrong direction,
right?
When we're going to be increasing so many other things. So right. I feel like I kind of need to think about that
sure.
one.
And yeah, think about the other increases, like particularly, I know one that we could get feedback on would be the connection fees for sewer going up above the $2,400. I know every time we raise connection fees, you know, there's always and that's just for a single family home is the $2,400. It's scale. We would scale it for all the others, that same increase. But I know we always get a little input from the community that's out there building homes and stuff like that, that impacts the cost. So think about that one as well in particular. And then if there's something else that for whatever reason you may not want to go with the recommendation, so that we can start bringing that back in July.
I think one thing that you've done well in the past years when we've done that is even before we get into the budget discussions in July is doing both the mock-up bills as well as the calculators. I think that's a good one to kind of see. It helps us talk about the impacts and what it would be. And would you be doing something similar again?
Yes, but I would need to know what percentages we're using. So if we wanted to use a different percentage than what's been recommended, I would need to do that very soon. I was just talking to IT this afternoon about how quickly we could get a calculator built and put on the internet. And I know we could do it probably by July, but.
Yeah, and I think this is my question for council. I think it was, you've seen the history of not making decisions based on cost of service studies. And it's why over the last few years, we've had to do these like the bigger increases. And so I think like for us, it's kind of like we want to trust the data that's there. I think the other thing that for me, I want to see partnered in, what are we doing to then also help? What conservation programs are we investing in to create, you know, opportunities for people not to have to spend, you know, what, and I know in the roundtables we talked about trying to continue the insulation projects, you know, even after ARPA funds are expended. Like, what are we doing to invest in that so that these impacts are hopefully lessened from those who don't have as much? So I'm interested in that. I've got, Valerie had her hand up and then Jackie had her hand up.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about the 6% electric increase. I know, is that 6% for all tiers, all users?
Yes.
And I know in the past when we've had larger increases, we studied you doing that differently across tiers.
So with the cost, with the last cost of service, there was he was trying to move towards the cost of service, and so some of those tiers changed differently. It wasn't unilaterally across the tiers because he was trying to match that cost of service. So we wouldn't change. It's much simpler if we just do 6%. For everything, and then the next cost of service, we can move towards the cost to provide that service.
Yeah, I understand that it's much simpler. I just worry about the impact to citizens. And I'd like to see us look at other ways of covering that cost of service. Like we have in the past.
So yeah, at this point, I think I was hoping to hold off on a cost of service on electric, but I think I'm going to recommend that maybe we do one next fiscal year. But the 6% is the minimum. I mean, you saw on the forecast the other night how far behind we are. That's the minimum for us to just even eke by.
I am absolutely not advocating for getting further behind.
Okay.
I'm advocating for recuperating those costs balanced differently than 6% across all tiers.
I've got Jackie, and then it probably wouldn't be a bad idea if the last cost of service study that we had done for electric could be shared since we have a lot of new council members.
Okay.
Yeah, Jackie.
It's kind of building off Valerie and Barbara's comments. This might be a DeCarlin question. So we currently have utility assistance for some of our citizens. Has there been discussion on what that will do to our budget as these rates go up and if we are gonna need to change? Because we've already spent that money very quickly, specifically through the winter. So has that been part of the budget discussion as far as utility assistance program and how these rate increases may impact the demand on our utilities assistance?
Yeah, that's actually not necessarily part of this process. So we use our internal auditors to actually look at our utility assistance program to see what adjustments need to be made. And we need to make some adjustments. That's probably a report that we're gonna bring back a little later to council to kind of what that is. We spend a lot in utility assistance and we compare it to other programs. The amount that we put into an individual property is a lot greater than. And so we may need to reduce that amount in order to actually balance the budget for it. But that is something that was looked at through our internal audit process. And so we're gonna bring something back to the council exactly what that looks like.
I think I remember years ago doing that research into who the addresses that request utility assistance. And I was like, the amount of money that we had just invested in the homes, you know what I mean? They would have saved energy. So I just, I appreciate that that's happening. Do you feel like direction, I feel like most of us, we want to go with the cost of, I appreciate Valerie's kind of questions, like what can we do in light of past cost of service studies maybe for that recommendation if it's not 6%, if there is any sort of understanding in that to see what staff suggest.
Okay.
But otherwise, I mean, following the recommendations, we're trying to help dig ourselves out of this hole. In some cases, literally.
But sewer's in a great spot.
Yay! We love sewers.
I mean,
yeah,
we love sewers. Okay. Big fancy. All right. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate the information and the dedication put aside. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to move on to our planning and zoning applicants interviews. We'll start this in about 4 minutes. And you can, we're moving the microphones so somebody can let Albert know to turn them off.